Makeshift Stories is now available on Stitcher Radio on demand. Download the free mobile app today and listen to us anywhere, anytime. There's no more syncing, no downloading, and no wasted memory.
Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
As the old saying goes, good things come in small packages. Or do they? What if that small package contains something quite unexpected, something unimaginable and unbelievable? In this month's story, a house sitter hiding from his past receives a mysterious special delivery that presents him with unexpected opportunities. We now invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 63, Special Delivery. Somewhere in some time you might be sent an unsolicited package that fundamentally changes your understanding of the universe. Sal Kleen stubbornly woke from a deep sleep, startled into semi-consciousness by a sudden wind that rustled the leaves on the trees outside the old single-paned bedroom window. Bright lights beyond the sagging glass cast scurrying deformed shadows on the walls. The lights finally settled in one place, then Sal heard someone open the front gate and walk at a purposeful pace up to the porch. The bell rang. Sal was alone, couldn't find his glasses, couldn't tell what time it was, and wasn't about to answer the door. The bell rang again. Sal froze, not wanting to give his presence away, wishing the unwelcome caller would give up and leave. Several impatient bangs on the front door reverberated through the old house. Silence followed. Then he heard the pat of footsteps on the walk. The gate banged shut again, and the lights slipped up the wall and across the ceiling until their angle to the window was too great. Then they receded, and the room lay in darkness again. Even the wind calmed to a light breeze that tickled the leaves instead of torturing them. As his nerves calmed, Sal eventually fell back into a fitful, dream-filled sleep. He was tired the next morning and groggy, woken in the middle of an anxiety-filled dream by a low-flying plane. The world seemed alien to him. Memories of the dream mixing with the dawn and burning off into reality like an early morning mist. Eventually, Sal found his way down to the kitchen at the back of the 19th century structure. He had the place to himself for another 10 days. He was house-sitting for its owners. House-sitting had inadvertently become his livelihood, starting with friends, then friends of friends, and now he advertised his skills online as the sitter, bonded, reliable, friendly, and was, or at least he tried to be. But it was not where he had imagined he would end up at this point in his life. Finishing business school with honors, he had become a sought-after financial advisor, a wealth manager in whom a new rising class of high-tech entrepreneurs had trusted. Then one day at a conference, he had run across a new startup called Space Research Systems, headed by a well-known venture capitalist. SRS was going to change the world, bring the power of private enterprise to space exploration, cheap access to low Earth orbit, space tourism, hypersonic travel, it would all be within reach. Sal had grown up dreaming of space, being born on the day of the first shuttle launch. He had always been an enthusiast, so when presented with the opportunity to combine career with a childhood obsession, he didn't hesitate. Now, he only wished that he had. But filtered through a haze of juvenile dreams, how could he have known that the research and manufacturing facilities he had been shown, and in turn had shown many starry-eyed investors, were in fact rented warehouses full of Soviet-era surplus space junk? It had looked real enough at the time, he lamented, as he fished a box of tea bags from a cupboard. Unfortunately, too late for Sal and the investors he had recruited, it had turned out to be an elaborate Ponzi scheme, intended to milk money from the nouveau riche of the tech industries. He had barely avoided jail time, but as a senior wealth manager, his career was over. House-sitting was all he could do now, and even then, if someone recognized his face, he wouldn't get the job. He had changed his name, but could never erase his likeness from the internet. In short, Sal had been reduced to an urban nomad, drifting from empty house to empty house, avoiding direct contact wherever he could with his new clients. And this was one of those jobs. A friend of a friend had apparently used his services and recommended him. Sal put the kettle on for tea, then leisurely walked to the front door, the remnants of his dream nearly gone. He fiddled with the lock until the temperamental old thing gave up. The door opened, and he stepped out, slipped on something, and fell sprawling awkwardly onto the dandelion-infested lawn. Sal groaned, looked around, then noticed the package. A partly crushed, plain, unbranded pizza box that now lay at the bottom of the stairs, presumably launched from the top when he had stepped on it. Feeling a bit foolish, then annoyed, Sal collected himself, brushing grass and leaves from his housecoat. He picked up the deformed package and examined it. Although it had similar dimensions to a pizza box, it clearly wasn't one. Instead of cardboard, it was made of slick, corrugated plastic, and instead of opening like a pizza box, one end contained a complex set of interlocking tabs, sealed down with a clear plastic sticky label, with "For SK" felt-marked on it in hurried letters. Sal remembered the late-night visit. "Odd time for a delivery," he mumbled. He had intentionally made himself hard to track down, so most people who knew him could only contact him online. Where he was from week to week, he considered his own business, and he didn't let anyone know exactly where he was, or was going. But sometimes out of sheer boredom, he would playfully drop hints, like a fragmentary glimpse of a cityscape behind him in a photo. It was a game he enjoyed playing, and this time, appeared to have lost. Sal carried the partly munched box back to the kitchen, set the package on the table, pulled a mug from one of the cupboards, dropped in a tea bag, and poured in hot water. He automatically sat down, opened his laptop, and began to read the morning headlines, reconsidered, and picked the box back up. Hoping that whatever was inside wasn't fragile, Sal sliced through the seal with a knife and worked the tabs loose, then opened the end. Sliding his hand in, he felt a cool surface and pulled. His hand came out, followed by a matte black circle, made of some kind of rubbery material. Sal shook the box, but there was nothing else in it. The circle had fallen down on one of the kitchen chairs, laying half on and half off, languidly drooping toward the floor. Sal gingerly lifted the oval back onto the table. Puzzled, he carefully touched its gooey surface, applying a small amount of pressure. The surface gave, denting down a centimeter. Sal lifted an edge of the odd disc and noted that it was paper thin. He let it drop back to the table, then tried again, pressing down harder. This time, it allowed his hand to sink in up to his knuckles. Weird, Sal thought. He lifted the circle once more and tested the tabletop underneath, hurting his hand as he wrapped it on its hard surface. He leaned over and examined it. The circle, the blob, or whatever it was, reflected no light. Its matte surface was more like a void than a plane, a nothing that both sat on the table and receded through it into infinite space. Sal pushed on it once again and looked under the table. There was nothing there. The bulge that his senses insisted should exist was not to be found. Sal sat back and took a taste of his tea, thinking. He picked up the box again, searching it for clues, but found nothing other than his initials. Distractedly, he began to draw a circle clockwise around the object with an index finger. As he did, its surface changed. First grains of wood, then what looked like the floor below the table, then the basement, then dark soil, and finally images Sal did not recognize appeared. He moved his fingers in the opposite direction and stopped when the floor below the table became visible again. Experimentally, Sal took a spoon and positioned it over the picture, then let it go. The spoon clattered on the linoleum floor below. He picked it up and tried again. Fascinated, he swept his finger around the edge of the circle until the basement appeared and dropped the spoon. Faintly, he heard a noise beneath the floor emanating from the basement. Again, Sal caressed the edge of the circle until it showed a picture of some deep, unrecognizable place. He picked up a fork and dropped it in, then counted to 15 before he heard the fork hit the bottom. He pinched himself to make sure he was awake. Sal took a sip from his now cold tea. He put his cup down again, then swept his hand in the opposite direction around the circle until its rubbery matte surface appeared. He had an idea, got up, rummaged in the front hall until he found a large piece of stiff cardboard, salvaged from the box the new flat-screen TV in the living room had come from. Sal took the sheet back to the kitchen, then slid it under the black circle thing, which he was now thinking of as a portable hole, then experimentally lifted the cardboard to a near-vertical position. The hole stuck tight. Next, Sal tried holding the dark circle over his head. It continued, preferring to defy gravity, clinging to the cardboard. Satisfied, Sal propped the cardboard up against a table leg, then swiped his fingers around the thing's curve until he saw the kitchen behind. He positioned himself perpendicular to it so he could see on both sides, then nervously pushed one hand through. To confirm that his eyes weren't deceiving him, Sal grabbed the wrist protruding from the hole with his other hand, then moved both back and forth together. Finally convinced, he let his hand go and relaxed back onto the floor, smiling. He spent the rest of the day moving the portable phenomena around, experimenting, discovered that he could stretch it so it was large enough for him to crawl through, and with some trial and error learned how he could accurately point it. Just before dinner, Sal opened a carefully aimed hole from the living room to his favorite pizza shop, 2 kilometers away, and crawled through. Finally, Sal had to admit that the possibilities would even tempt the most honest person. He fell asleep that night, wondering how it worked and why it had been sent to him. The weather changed, and it rained for the next few days. Sal spent most of that time in the clear sunny skies of a desert on the other side of the continent, popping back to the house now and then to keep up his sitting duties. On the fourth day, the skies around the house finally cleared, and a new invigorated sun spent the morning industriously evaporating the dampness, hiding in the now vigorously growing weeds of the front lawn. Sal reluctantly concluded that there would be no time to travel today. He needed to catch up on the yard work. He rummaged through the back of the old dirt floor garage until he found a gas-powered lawnmower that appeared to be 3 or 4 times older than he was. He wheeled the beast out onto the driveway, put in a set of foam orange earplugs, checked the gas tank, then yanked on the cord until the old Victorian machine came to life in a cloud of blue smoke. A few minutes later, Sal struggled to push the machine through the still wet grass and dandelions. In response, the ancient contraption belched small shredded green missiles and greasy exhaust, giving the yard the telltale smell of a suburban summer. The noise overpowered the local environment, and perhaps it was that, combined with the earplugs, that prevented him from hearing the young woman who had materialized unnoticed on the sidewalk in front of the house. She was yelling something when Sal looked up.
"Can you turn that off? I need to talk to you."
She was pointing to the lawnmower. Lip reading, Sal finally understood, then let go of the mower's throttle. The machine stubbornly coughed, choked, and finally fell silent. The woman smiled and opened the gate. "Hi," Sal suspiciously called.
"Are you living here while the owner is away?"
She nodded at the house. Realizing that it was not best to let anyone know of a client's absence, Sal intentionally ignored the question.
"I live across the street. My name is Serene Kendall."
"Hey, we have the same initials, SK.
Sal involuntarily blurted out of nervousness more than anything, remembering as he spoke the letters felt marked on the package.
"Oh, really? What an interesting coincidence."
Serene gave him a knowing look.
"Actually, I was hoping that you could help me. Did you receive a special delivery package a few days ago with the initials SK on the label? It would have looked a bit like a pizza box."
No packages. I mean, nothing has been delivered here. Why would anything come here? Nothing was ordered."
Sal stammered. He didn't know why he had automatically lied.
"Are you sure? No delivery at an odd time, like early morning or late night?"
Serene casually inquired.
"Nothing, not even junk mail,"
Sal replied a little too quickly. He wished he'd come clean but was too afraid to change course now. What was this woman up to? Did she know who he was? Was she after him? Was this some elaborate scheme set up by a disgruntled SRS investor to get back at him? The questions circled around in his mind, and he began to sweat uncontrollably. Sal desperately wanted this serene person to go away.
"Look, just in case, I'll go through the mail again after I finish the yard work." Sal wiped the sweat from his brow.
"Well, judging from the weeds and the length of that grass, looks like it'll take you a while. You know, I haven't seen you go in and out of the house for the last couple of days. I thought you might have left."
Serene paused and waited. When Sal did not respond, she shrugged and walked away, calling over her shoulder,
"See you later, after you get the place back in shape. Guess that means the owners are coming back soon, huh?"
Sal cringed. The nosy neighbor had figured out too much, so he was glad the job would be over in the next couple of days. On a hunch, he waited until Serene had disappeared around the block. Once she was out of sight, he rushed to the garbage can and frantically searched for the box the portal thing had come in. But it wasn't there. Disturbed by Serene's visit, Sal only used the device once that day. Checking the front street through a drawn blind, he waited until he saw Serene leave. Then he formed a portal and opened a hole near the grocery store. On the other end, he looked carefully around to make sure no one had seen him come out, closed the hole, then lifted the portal off the concrete wall, rolled it up, and put it into his backpack. Too edgy to use it again, Sal took the bus home when he was finished shopping. The street was pretty much empty when he arrived back at the house. Only a retired couple walking their yappy dogs was around. One of the canines stopped, considered doing its business on the freshly cut boulevard in front of the house. Sal scowled at the owners, who, embarrassed, tugged the resolute dog away from its carefully selected spot. He turned back to the front door and struggled with a temperamental lock, jerking the thing and wiggling its latch until it decided to admit him again.
"Huh, your days are numbered,"
Sal vindictively told the stubborn door, as he briefly pondered the uselessness of such physical barriers in a new world of portable holes, suddenly realized the implications and hoped such a future would never happen. The door noisily swung in. Sal bent down to pick up his bags of groceries. As he stood up in the shadows of the hall, he thought he saw a woman's calf and a bright lime green training shoe disappear into the wall. He dropped his bags and ran to the spot where he had seen the apparition. Mistaking a knot in the wooden wainscoting as a small hole, he tried to push his finger in after her. Pain shot through his arm, telling him that he had just jammed his finger into something very solid.
"Wow, she's really spooked me," Sal mumbled to himself.
He spent the rest of the afternoon weeding, trying to convince himself that he had become too paranoid. He decided that he needed a break, needed to go someplace where no one would ever know who he was. That night, Sal made himself his favorite dinner, saffron rice and chicken mole, comfort food to calm his nerves, and was about to sit down and eat when the doorbell rang. Startled and with a sense of dread, he made his way to the front door. The bell rang again, followed by several determined raps. Sal cautiously opened the door a crack and found Serene staring back.
"Hi, I've brought dessert."
She gave him a big toothy grin. When Sal didn't move, she added,
"I could smell the cinnamon and saffron from across the street. Smells good. Hopefully there's enough for two."
Feeling cornered, Sal caved in, and with a sense of resignation, opened the door. Serene immediately swept through into the front hall, heading for the kitchen, as if she had lived in the house all her life. She was balancing a box from the local bakery in front of her and trailed a large shoulder bag behind. With a growing knot in his stomach, Sal slowly followed Serene into the kitchen, where she had already found a plate and was busy filling it with rice and chicken.
"Why don't you help yourself?" Sal sarcastically invited, then slumped into his chair and began to pick at his food.
Serene placed her dish on the table and hungrily started in. Between mouthfuls, she asked,
"Did you find the package?"
"No, and I'm not used to strange neighbors inviting themselves in either,"
Sal defensively stated, finally taking a bite from his own plate.
"Are you friends with the owners? You seem to know your way around here."
Never met them. Never been in here before. Good rice,"
Serene mumbled, then took another forkful in her mouth and slowly chewed, staring intently at Sal,
looking as if she were trying to decide something. Sal finally broke the silence.
So, Serene, tell me, what do you do when you're not being an uninvited guest?
Oh, I practice the dark arts.
She paused for effect, then added,
a financial advising.
Sal felt his heart start to pound, convinced that she knew.
Well, I really only have one client right now. They're very unique and need to remain anonymous.
She continued.
I discreetly manage their assets, advise them on other matters, and do the odd project for them.
Sal sat stiffly in his seat.
Well, I really don't know about those types of things.
He lied, then leaned over his food, trying to hide his face. He had never been a very convincing liar, and felt that she could see right through him. So Sal tried to divert the conversation.
Is that package you're looking for important? What's in it, anyway?
Oh, come on, don't play dumb. You should know by now.
Serene sat back in her chair, surveying Sal like a cat about to play with its prey, then suddenly got up and retrieved a kitchen knife and two plates from the counter.
You know, it's time for dessert.
Serene announced as she quickly lifted two wedges of cake onto the plates and handed one to Sal.
But I'm not finished eating.
Sal started to protest.
Hey, I've tried your dinner and it's good. Now it's time for you to try my favorite dessert.
Serene insisted. Sal decided to humor the woman, hoping that she would leave sooner. So he picked up a fork and took a tentative mouthful. Serene appeared to relax. The cake tasted awful, but Sal continued pretending to like it.
You know something? You look kind of familiar.
Serene finally said, carefully studying Sal's face.
A couple of years ago, there was a big scandal involving a private space venture. My client was involved. I was running a project for them.
Sal froze in mid-bite, nearly choking, then spit out a half-chewed mouthful of the odd-tasting cake. And for the first time, he realized that Serene hadn't touched hers.
Okay, what's your point?
He angrily blurted out.
I admit it.
That you got the package?
Serene interrupted.
No, yes, I mean, I was head of investor relations for Space Research Systems. How much did your client lose? Is that why you're here, to somehow get back at me?
A sudden realization came to him.
Is that what that crazy black hole thing is? Have you been somehow feeding me hallucinogens so I would believe it was real? So I would think I was going insane?
Sal suddenly jumped up, leaving most of his blood at rest on the chair and nearly blacked out. But he found he couldn't recover. His head had become a fuzzy mess of suspicion, guilt, and anger. He drunkenly wobbled to the hall closet, struggled with his backpack to liberate it, staggered back to the kitchen, and threw it on the floor at Serene's feet.
There. It's in there. It's yours. I didn't know about the scam, you know. I'm a victim, too. It ruined my life. Look, I can barely get a job house-sitting. And now that you spotted me, that's probably gone, too.
After the trial, no one even trusted me to work behind the counter of a fast food restaurant. Everyone forgot that I'd been proven innocent. All I wanted to do was to help the world get back into space exploration, and maybe make some money while doing it.
Sal had given up trying to pretend, trying to calm himself down.
Serene laughed.
Hey, don't worry. My client didn't lose a thing. Quite the opposite. In fact, they were really happy about the scam. It's kept investors away from space ventures for years, and probably wrecked that industry.
I don't understand,
was all Sal could manage to say. The room was beginning to spin.
I think it's time for you to meet my client.
Serene retrieved Sal's backpack, pulled out the black circle, laid it on the kitchen tile, and stretched it until the surface seemed to cover half the floor. Sal helplessly watched, unable to get off his chair or even lift an arm. Fear raged through his mind, but he could not make a sound. It felt like he was in a nightmare, where no matter how hard you try to run, your legs stay rooted in one place. Serene brushed her hands around the edge of the now enormous black void. Its surface shimmered slightly, and Sal thought he could see a blurry landscape form at some distant point beyond. She then turned her attention to Sal, carefully walking around the portal to him. Sal, now completely immobile, helplessly stared into the hole as Serene pushed him in the chair, in.
Another job well done,
Serene said to the empty room. Sal woke with hammers pounding the insides of his skull. Experimentally, he opened one eye. A painful, harsh, reddish light shot in, forcing him to close it. He tried his luck with the other eye and got the same blinding light. Sal's confused mind dragged up an old saying about trying the same thing more than once and expecting a different result. He felt insulted by his own subconscious. So it wouldn't laugh at him, he tried a new tactic and attempted to shade his eyes with an arm, but he could barely lift it off the ground. His arm felt like it had lead weight strapped to it. He could only hold it up long enough to turn his head away from the searing reddish glare. If the light hadn't been an orangey red, he would have sworn he had been trying to look into the sun. Now peering through a cloud of afterimages, Sal could sort of make out a stout, furry silhouette that looked something like an overgrown squirrel on steroids, impatiently tapping a foot-like appendage. Sal tried to push himself up onto his elbows, but couldn't, and collapsed back onto the ground, panting with the effort.
Well, look at that. You're finally awake. It's been quite a while, you know. Serene promised me that you'd be lucid on arrival. She didn't exactly deliver, did she? I don't like being kept waiting. You're lucky to have an audience with me at all.
An irate, squeaky voice chattered at him. It took a few seconds for Sal to realize that the voice was connected to the silhouetted figure. He noticed more like it standing in rows behind the speaker and felt the presence of yet more on his other side. He was surrounded. Sal felt like Gulliver, pinned to the ground, only there were no tiny ropes holding him down. He tried to struggle up again. It took all his strength to prop himself up on his elbows. His imagination ran wild. A force field? He asked, to no one in particular.
It's gravity, Mr. Giant. Just gravity. Quite convenient for our purposes. Our real benefit of being small, we're quite at home in the gravity. But you're not. We love it, in fact. Keeps us toned.
The squirrel-like figure defiantly flexed its muscles.
But fortunately, it's not so good for you. You can't live here, at least for very long.
It corrected.
So, before you black out again, I'll get right down to business. You can lie down if you want. It'll help keep the blood in your head. Make it easier for your big flabby heart.
Stubbornly ignoring the advice, Sal struggled and determinedly brought himself to a sitting position. It was easier to balance his head on the top of his spine, and his elbows had already started to hurt. His insides, on the other hand, felt like they were trying to flatten into his pelvis. He spoke in broken words between deep heaving breaths.
Where? Why? Who? English?
Good questions, Mr. Giant,
the creature squeaked, thoughtfully nodding its head and wiggling its bushy tail.
To the point. Perfect. I like that. No chit-chat. As to who, that's not important. For various reasons, we need to keep a low profile. As to where, well, the name of our planet wouldn't probably mean anything to you. But if you must know, your people call it HR8799C, if that helps.
Sal grimaced with the effort of sitting.
Well, I don't like the name that your scientists have given our world either,
it added.
As to language, well, let's just say we've had a long relationship with your kind. You know, flying saucers, etc., that kind of thing.
The creature snickered, almost choking on its own obscure joke.
Well, really, it was a great idea to distract your world. One of your own came up with it, too. Well, when you think about it, it's really ridiculous. Who the heck would ever travel like that? Prohibitively expensive, and really slow to boot. But I digress. On to the main question, the big money question, the why. We followed your work with Space Research Systems and loved it. That debacle helped us set back space exploration on your world for decades.
What?
Sal tried to grunt.
It's why you're here. We were impressed.
But it ruined my career, Sal complained.
Ah, that. A minor detail that can be fixed. The space-time thing, you know. We make portals that can poke holes in space. And time? Do you need specifics? Or can your underpowered human imagination fill in the blanks? After you've signed up, it'll be a trivial thing to change. For your part, all you need to do is make a few strategic investments or supervise the odd project and kind of encourage things to happen in a particular way.
Sal involuntarily nodded his head as he struggled to keep it vertical.
Ah, I see that you understand, that you agree. Perfect. We have recorded your acceptance of our offer.
Sal was about to use his last second of consciousness to object, then changed his mind. The insistent gravity finally overcame him, his vision tunneling to black. He fell to the ground in a leaden heap, then blacked out. Sal walked quickly through the overcrowded exhibition hall of the conference. Hopeful new startup company Booz competed for his attention, but fresh from the session on the privatization of spaceflight, Sal was only interested in one, SRS, Space Research Systems. Inspired by their presentation, he was on his way to meet their CEO.
Excuse me?
The voice came from behind. Sal pivoted and found himself looking at the face of an oddly familiar person.
Hi, my name is Serene, and my client has a proven technology that's far better than physical space travel. There's a good chance you won't remember, but you've already experienced it. It may have seemed like a dream, but then we all get used to that.
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Story 63, Somewhere, Sometime, Special Delivery. We hope that you enjoyed this month's story. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us, or write a review on iTunes. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. The opening and closing theme is Pod Safe Music by David H. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivative License, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.